Welcome back to the program. Top of the hour, Sam Cosentino is aboard Prospect Watch 2022. NHL draft this year in Montreal. Shane Wright headlines everybody. With all due respect to Brad Lambert, this is all going to be about Shane Wright of the Kingston Frontenac. Sammy gets us caught up at the top of the hour. Meanwhile, we turn our attention to Vancouver and a good friend, Thomas Drance, who is now the co-host of a brand new program which kicks off on Monday, the 18th of the month. He is Thomas Drance. He is now the co-host of the Canucks Hour on Sportsnet 650, and we welcome him to the program. Drancer, how are you today, bud?
I'm doing well, Merrick. Thanks for having me, bud. I'm coming at you live from the Wells Fargo Center. I'm actually, like, literally sitting feet from the rink where Canucks scratches have just been rinsed, and looking forward to covering my first game in the United States in an awfully long time.
Well, I want to get to that because it's got to be a fantastic feeling. I remember when I touched down in Chicago for the NHL Players Tour, I'm like, wow, it's been too long since I've been to the States. which players, by the way, have their tongues hanging out with Nolan Baumgartner?
Yeah. Luke Shen, Brock Besser, and Brad Hunt were all rinsed. Travis Green didn't confirm that Besser wouldn't play, although he did sort of indicate that he was doubtful for tonight. Yeah. But, you know, getting rinsed is confirmation enough. He also wouldn't confirm his third pair, but the fact that his fourth pair was just out here, that tells you everything you need to know. So Jack Rathbone will play. So will Kyle Burrows, getting his second game with the Canucks. Always good to stick around late to do a radio hit, because you get to see exactly what the coach wouldn't quite tell you earlier on.
In this era where people can hang around and people understand math and can, you know, read, you know, numbers on the backs of helmets and why not just come, especially in this year, now more so than ever, how the NHL is cozying up to the gambling community. Like, I don't know if there should be a mandate or just strongly encourage. Like, why not just come out and say it? What's the harm?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I also really want numbers on the back of practice jerseys. I think that should be a league rule. I was sitting up in the stands right beside Brendan Batchelor, the, play-by-play caller for Sportsnet 650 today. And I'm like looking around, right? I'm sort of like tweaking my head, trying to squint and read the numbers on the back of the helmets, which are so small relative to what they'd be if they were on a back of a jersey. And I sort of look over and Travis Green himself is like laughing at me. And then he gets off the ice. And he tells me I look like Dumb and Dumber, sort of squinting and jockeying in my seat, looking to get. He's like, "You look so serious. You're like a Dumb and Dumber character." And I'm like, "Well, put the numbers on the jerseys, Travis. Like, put the numbers on the jerseys, and you'll save my neck."
So a couple of things there that makes me think of that, and I want to get to numbers on the fronts of helmets and where that came from. And there was initially pushback on it. Oh, it's just going to look like football. Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm thinking of? I remember a conversation I had with two conversations, one with Jim Rutherford, one with David Poile. And this is coming out of the 204-205 lockout. And this is the first year of the salary cap in the NHL, which when you look back on it, think of the range. $39 million was the high end, and then 21. I remember talking to Poile. He's like, "I can't even afford 16. How am I going to get to 21? But here we are. That was 04-05. But the one thing that those two teams specifically did is whenever they signed a player that year, in their press release, they put in there how much the player was earning. And that's, at that time, as you recall, that's rare. Because every team at the bottom of the press release, as per team policy, the
terms of the deal were not disclosed.
Terms of the deal will not be disclosed. That's the catchphrase I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Some teams still do that. And I remember asking Rutherford about it and Poile, and they had the same answer. They both said, "Look, you know, we're in a marketplace where we're looking to sell our game and make it easy to follow the game and make it easy to understand. So we want our fans to understand where each dollar is going. It just makes them better fans, and it makes them understand our decisions." And, you know, when I think of your idea about putting, you know, in practice, putting numbers on the backs of the practice sweaters, like, why not just make it easy to follow the game? Why not just make it easier for the media to do their job? First of all, you'll buy a lot of gray. Second of all, you'll just get better coverage because it'd be easier to do it. So to your point, you don't have to squint to read the menu on the ice.
100%. And, you know, I like putting together the puzzles, right? Like, that's something that I enjoy doing, but I also would prefer it if it was easier, right? And I do think, you know, the idea that you hang around the game for a decade the way I have, right? You spend some time working for a team, so you kind of know where the seams are and know where to look, right? And as a result, you can get to the closest possible approximation of exactly what the lineup looks like. That's a service that I take pride in providing for my readers, but you shouldn't necessarily need to have that sort of depth of experience to be able to read the language between the language of a morning skate so that you come out with something relatively close to what it is, right? I mean, it should be a little bit more turnkey, I'd think, especially, you know, for all the reasons you discussed about selling the game and on and on. And I think the salaries is a really interesting one too, you know, because I mean, it's hard to imagine now, but like, do you remember an era before Cap Geek or Cap Friendly at this point? Like, I don't. It's such a core element to how we talk about and understand the game, right? Yeah. And as we get into, I remember one thing I always tried to explain to everybody once I was on the PR side down in Florida was like, every injury is a national story, right? And people didn't quite understand that. That was like a little bit of a foreign concept to people. They were like, no, it's like, yeah, it is, because Roto World is going to have an update on X third pair defenseman who's not playing. And that's because of fantasy. Like, fantasy sports too, gambling is going to be the next one. You know, our understanding of the more technical side of like cap management and the amount of time that the Vancouver market in particular spends discussing like cap allocation. Like, all of these things might seem niche, they might seem unromantic relative to the way that the sport used to be talked about and covered, but it all appeals to somebody. And as you build and try to expand the tent as large as you can, you know, there's no sort of detail too niche to appeal to somebody. And I think it's important that you capture that as best you can anyway.
You know, you mentioned, salary cap websites, and, you know, Cap Geek was the one that everyone jumped on right away. It was the first, it was originally just supposed to be for the Detroit Red Wings, and then it exploded to the entire league. It was a great service. Whenever I think of Cap Geek, I always have to go out of my way to mention the great Matthew Wiest, based in Halifax, who was... Listen, there's no Cap Friendly if there's no Cap Geek. You know, there's no Puckopedia if there's not Cap Geek. What Matthew Wiest, like, when the great book of this era is ever written in hockey, I hope there's a really special chapter for Matthew Wiest, because he deserves it.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'll tell you what, Dranser, I'll date myself here. There's going to be a generation gap occurring between us right now. I remember, Dranser, a time when there wasn't salary disclosure. We had to guess what players made, and we had no idea. So, yeah, I can appreciate your Puckopedias and your Cap Friendlies more than anybody, because the interesting thing too, I always think about this, like, there are people now that have joined the game that don't know a world without Cap Friendly or Cap Geek previous or Puckopedia. Like, wow, I feel so old, right? Like, Grandpa, tell us the story when, you know, you didn't know how much Lanny McDonald made or how much, you know, Harold Snepps made. Like, wow, what kind of crazy world must that have been?
I know.
You know, just getting into the minutiae of all of it, mentioning the numbers on the sweaters again, we're going to talk about the Canucks here, I swear. You know where the, you probably do, but you know where the idea of putting numbers on the fronts of helmets came from in the NHL?
I don't, actually.
So I don't know if John Shannon was behind it, but he used to always bang this drum. It comes from television and camera operators who, you know, the director of the studio will be calling for a shot of the person because the booth is going to talk about them. So the camera people will scramble to try to find that player. And if that player is not on the ice, then they're on the bench. And if you don't know what the player looks like, you have no way of identifying. And so that was a nod to television. And the pushback was obviously like, oh, no, they do that in football. They don't do that in hockey. But that was a nod for the camera operators to be able to identify, hey, we're looking for so-and-so. He wears number 14. You scan down the bench, boom, that player has it on his helmet, and that's where you're free. That is a complete concession to television.
I love that. And, you know, again, this is one of my old PR habits, but you know how you're supposed to check your rearview mirror every 10 seconds while you're driving? I have this habit that I can't get over. I cannot break it, where I count the bodies on the bench. Every minute of game action when I'm covering a game, I just count the bodies on the bench, just in case there's like an injury I've missed or something, right? I'm so used to doing that. Yeah, so I do it honestly. It's like checking my rearview mirror. I just quickly, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like, and I don't sort of stop until I get to, you know, the 13 that I'm looking for plus the 5 on the ice, right?
So do you get all anxious? Do you get anxious when you're watching like on TV or a tablet or on your phone, like you can't count the bench?
I do. 100%. It's a completely different experience for me. It's quite strange. And you know, while we're segueing into the Canucks, right? Of course, the PCHL was the first, the Vancouver Millionaires were the first to put numbers on jerseys, of course, the Patrick family. So, some West Coast hockey, history there for everybody.
They were the first to do the numbers. They were the first to do the forward pass in all three zones.
Goalies leaving their feet.
you know the great. I don't know if we have time for it. You know the story about that, where that phrase comes from? They can stand on their head. Comes from Frank Calder. So in the PCHL, like as you mentioned, like goaltenders could go down to make saves, but not in the NHL, and then afterwards the NHA, and then the NHL. And a number of managers used to always lob. I think George Hainsworth might have been the goaltender. They would always want to go down, and he would get – it was a penalty if you went down.
Right.
And Frank Calder, who then was the president, because Bettman's the only commissioner, was the president of the NHL, always, you know, pushed against it. And his great quote, finally when he relented, he said, "All right, fine, goalies can go down. I don't care. For all I care, they can stand on their head. That's fine." And that quote, when a goaltender does really well in the game, what do we always say? He's standing on his head. And that goes back to the 20s and Frank J. Calder. But let's bring it to 2021. And tonight, the Vancouver Canucks and the Philadelphia Flyers. What should we know about the Vancouver Canucks today, Drancer?
Yeah, I mean, Vasily Podkolzin is sort of the story, I think, based on Morning Skate. He got bumped up to the second line after playing just a hair over 7 minutes in the first game. You know, for me, and I think there's been flashes of what this guy can do, for me, there's a pretty clear learning curve that this player is going to be going through over the next several weeks and months, frankly. In terms of just, and it's an interesting dynamic, Jeff, because this guy is 6'1". You know, he's a big kid, and physically he is ready to play this game, more than ready, right? But in terms of some of the touches and the way of playing on this ice sheet, right? Like, these are his first games in North American pro hockey, still learning the language. He's still adjusting. And so what I see right now is a lot of bad angle shots and a lot of, like, passes that aren't necessarily going where they would if it was a more experienced NHL player. You know, making the touch. Or, for example, in game one, where there was a soft dump behind Mike Smith. And what happens if you make a soft dump behind Mike Smith, right? He's obviously going to leave the net and clear it himself.
Try to score.
In that case, he rifled it at the Canucks bench, and the Canucks took a too many men penalty, right? So it's like, and the Oilers scored on the goal. So, you know, there's little items like that. Now, my guess is that despite starting the game or taking rushes on that second line, he's still going to play, you know, 10th, 11th, or 12th most ice time among Canucks forwards. He's still probably going to play fourth line minutes. But getting him some shifts with Pettersson and Miller right off the bat kind of makes it easier to get his ice time a little bit higher, which I'm sure is something the Canucks want to do. I mean, if this kid has a ton of talent, a ton of intelligence. You can see the work rate. You can see a lot of things you really like from a young guy, like his desire to get back, you know, like there's a clear attention to detail there too, that you got to love. This is a player who could have a big impact for the Canucks down the stretch, but I do think it's going to be, you know, months of playing 10 minutes a night or close to it every game before we start to see sort of the returns in terms of production, in terms of two-way impact from this player. My guess is elevating him up the lineup makes it easier for the Canucks to get him into that sort of, you know, 9 to 11 minute range that ideally you'd find a way for him to play every night, regardless of how he performs.
Got a couple of minutes here, and I want to park some time to talk about your new show, but I want to get your thoughts on Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I know it's only a one game audit we're doing on, and mind you, he did score. But what did you see? You know, we've talked about the contract, like that's the obvious conversation. But what did you see in game one from Oliver Ekman-Larsson? Because as we pointed out before, and so have you, man, this one's a huge gamble. This one's a big gamble.
Yeah, I've described it as a franchise defining risk, and I don't think that's unfair or inaccurate. Right. The fact is that in game one, he looked good. Like, he looked solid. He looked sturdy. The club didn't exactly control play when he was on the ice, but, you know, considering they were playing McDavid and Dreisaitl together on one line, I don't think you're too concerned about that. He scored the goal. He looked good on the power play. I thought he looked like a three, you know, like I thought he looked like a second pair defenseman. And if that's what the Canucks are getting, you know, I think that's a big upgrade over what he offered the Coyotes last year and probably for a couple of years going into this season. So I thought it was a really good start for Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I bought that he's going to have a bounce back. You know, the two-way numbers have sort of been trending in the wrong direction for a while, but really they fell off a cliff last year. And for me, that was the outlier season. And I sort of expected him to at least be a pretty credible second pair option for the club. He looked like that in the first game. And I did have an opportunity to catch up with Keith Yandle today, Flyers defenseman, after the Philadelphia morning skate. I was asking him about Ekman Larson and, you know, as a young man, when he came into the league and was playing for Arizona.
Yeah.
And, you know, Yandle was talking about just how smart he was back then. You know, they played this weird power play that only had one right-handed shot in Radim Berbata. And Yandle was saying that the thing that made it work was the way that Ekman Larson would charge back door, would drop low. Hmm. Something that they tried originally, you know, with Yandle, and he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't figure it out the way that a 19-year-old Ekman Larson did. And they ended up sort of building the power play around that, a season that he scored 20 goals. The other thing Yandle offered up to me was, he said, you know, right away, even when he's on his ELC, you know, he had fine things. Like, he had a Lambo and he lived well. Something yeah. that always impressed Keith. Yes.
First check, first car. Nice. We got about 30 seconds to answer. Tee up Monday. It's a big one for 650.
Yeah, it's really excited to do this. Canucks Hour with Jamie Dodd will be my co-host, and we're going to be an hour show following you, you know, in the Vancouver market, which is an honor for me, by the way, to be in what I'm calling the Merrick late slot. And we're really looking forward to.
You're supposed to say I'm your opening act. Thanks for warming them up. Now get off the stage while they're still clapping, dummy.
But we're really excited. Like, I'm going to be traveling, right? This show will be done from the road, from the ring. Right. It's so going cool. to be extremely tactile. It's going to be laser focused on the Canucks news of the day. I can't wait to get started. I think people are really going to like it.
Don't be late for this one. Thomas Drantz, the co-host of the Canucks Hour. More on that subsequent date. Thanks so much for this. We'll talk soon.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jeff. Cheers.
Sam Cosentino coming up. Also, Andrew Raycroft on the McAvoy deal. Producer Matt Marchese, adding names to the program on the fly, earning his money on a Friday. Normally, Friday is the lick the envelope, mail it in, put the feet up. It's Friday, Slate Quarry. Yabba dabba doo, here's the weekend. No, Matt, not Matt Marchese. Andrew Raycroft joining us here in about 15 minutes' time, and then bottom of the hour, Brad for a living, general manager of the Calgary Flames. So lots to get to with both those gentlemen, with Andrew Raycroft. A lot of talk about Charlie McAvoy and that contract extension, 8 years, $76 million. Now, with Brad Treliving, it'll be, what's taking you so long to play a game? Flames general manager here to talk about all things Calgary Flame. Meantime, Sam Cosentino, his latest prospect notebook is out. An early look at the 2022 draft, headline by, surprise, surprise, Sammy, Shane Wright. And was watching you on Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, breaking down the virtues of Shane Wright. And I know that he hasn't had, I was talking to someone the other day, hasn't had a start that he would like in this OHL season, but there's no one that's going to challenge for this top spot, is there?
No chance. It's done. You can book it right now. The only thing we can't book is which team is going to be able to have the honor to pick the young man. And after last night, maybe it does look like Arizona.
Although, like, let's be honest. Like, we saw, like, there have been a couple of moments where, like, there have been a couple of seasons where it's really obvious what teams are doing. Like, the Connor McDavid season, what Tim Murray yep. did with the Buffalo Sabres that year was really, I mean, you cover that Fort Lauderdale draft. Like, going into that, like, that was pretty obvious. Like, every time a goaltender made a save in Buffalo, that guy got shipped out. That's not the program we're running here. Thank you very much. But you can, like, just by way of construction, whether it's Arizona or whether it's Buffalo, you know, they know it's going to be a painful season. But at the end of it, like, you have a shot at getting Shane Wright. What can you tell us about this, you know, elite level hockey player?
Absolutely no deficiencies in his game. You want him to take draws, D zone. You want him to protect the lead. You need a guy out there to score a goal. You need someone who makes those around him better. His ability to shoot the puck. I was talking to one scout this morning, and there's been a lot out there about a Patrice Bergeron type of comparison. And this one scout said to me, well, why not Sidney Crosby? You know, he's got a good lower half. He approaches the game like a pro. You know, Sidney's always kind of laser focused. So the off ice approach is very much the same as what Sidney brought to the table, even back as a, you know, 16 year old in Rimouski back in 03 and 04. So there's nothing that he can't do in the game and do well. And I think the most telling thing is, Jeff, when you don't play for 14 months, you show up at world elite level competition at the under 18s, where you're technically still an underage player. You lead the tournament in points, you miss two games, and you played the entire tournament banged up in one way or another, whether it was a, you know, a virus he had and you know, an upper or lower body issue. He wasn't anywhere near 100%, and he still was able to accomplish that feat, win a gold medal, captain his team, and have all that kind of success. Like, that's really heady stuff for me.
You know, his background's a fascinating one as well. I mean, he's always played a year up. He was granted exceptional status to get into the OHL early after playing on that stacked 2003 Don Mills Flyers squad that you know, went through the entire season. Were pushed by the Red Wings, but ended up winning the OHL Cup, as you well know. Like, his story is an interesting one. Like, this guy, it wasn't like, oh, he's a late bloomer and he's just, you know, jumped in. Like, maybe you can make the argument for Owen Power, but this guy's been ticketed for greatness for a number of years, Sammy.
Yeah, he has. And I think about Connor McDavid, and I remember watching him, you know, play with the Marlies, and he was just this itty bitty little kid. And the same sort of thing that it followed him around, you know, the media, the hype. And of course he's lived up to that hype and maybe even more. And I think the same thing is going to happen for Shane. I mean, Shane is just that serious about his game. And, you know, you think about the pandemic and how it hurt a lot of people. He is one of the few guys that I think had huge benefits from it. He knew he had to improve his stamina, his strength. He still worked on his puck skills. I think Josh Rovell, Don Bradham, if I'm not mistaken, helped out with his with the skating, because he knows that's an area he can always improve in. And, you know, the off-ice workouts were next to none, where he didn't take any time off. So he's ready to rock and roll. He's not off to the start I'm sure he would have liked, as you mentioned. But, you know, the 3-3 can be difficult when you haven't played in such a long time. And, you know, that same scout that I was talking to this morning said, yeah, it's funny. He was absolutely gassed, but he was never out of position in the last of those 3-3 that Kingston played last weekend. So really, really important stuff there.
Special hockey player. You know, I'll tell you what, Winnipeg looks to be a really good season. Looks to be a really good team this season in the Western Hockey League. And I know we're going to talk a lot about Matthew Savoie. We're going to talk a lot about Connor Geeky. What should we know about these two players? I mean, Savoie we started talking about a few years ago. Where's he at right now vis-a-vis Shane Wright and the top spot?
Yeah, so it's pretty awesome. It's really, you know, shaping up to be a wild card race after Shane Wright. I don't think either Connor Geeky or Matthew will enter that conversation. But Matthew's also a guy who, because of some loopholes, was able to play in the Western Hockey League at 15 years old. During the shutdown season, he went to Dubuque in the USHL. He performed extremely well there. You know, some say it might have been better for him to stay with Winnipeg and remain in the bubble. I think it was beneficial for him to go and play in the USHL. Of course, happy to see him back in Winnipeg. So he's a guy that probably has some undercover compete and edge to his game. And I think the skill is obviously what dazzles you there. A little bit on the smaller side, but, you know, centering the top line for the number four team in the CHL at that age is really special. And Connor Geeky is a guy who, with his size and his hands, you don't get that combination very often. He, too, plays with a little bite. He centers the second line for Winnipeg. And Steve Patrick out there with that number four ranked team. But he's a guy who really worked on his skating. You know, as a bigger guy, he was kind of had that reputation last year as a guy who lumbered around a little bit, but worked on that. So not only can he go through you, but he can go around you. And maybe most importantly, Jeff, about Connor was that he was subject to the tutelage and the mentorship of Peyton Krebs, now with the Vegas Golden Knights, during that bubble situation last year. So he couldn't escape all the things that Peyton was doing to prepare not only for what was happening on ice, but his off-ice habits, the rest, the sleep, the recovery, the eating, all of those things that are so important to make you a sustainable pro.
A couple of more things, and I want to have a quick look back at a very specific draft, because a very big contract got signed today by Charlie McAvoy. I want to get your thoughts on him going back to his draft year. Before we get there, tell us about Brad Lambert in Finland.
Yeah, so I think he's a guy he's suffering from the draft year blues, I believe. And the thing is, when you go in as an underager and you play in the U-20s, the World Juniors, and you play well there, you get 46 games in the Liga in Finland. You weren't expected to do much there, but you put up 15 points. He went back at least closer to his age group at the under-18s and was just okay. And he struggled at the start of this year. I mean, his teammate Joachim Kamel leads the league in points, 14 points in 12 games. Brad has just 1 point in nine games. Dad Ross is from Saskatoon. His uncle Lane is on the bench with Barry Trotz and has been forever and a day. So he's a guy who comes from a hockey family, but he's a guy that I believe right now is really kind of suffering from the draft year blues. He has a lot more to give than what he's shown so far.
All right, to Charlie McAvoy, and I'll take you back to the Buffalo draft. 2016, Austin Matthews goes first, Patrick Laine, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Jesse Puljujärvi. I think you were one of the only people. Did you predict him going third to Columbus? I want to say that you were one of the only people that, like, don't be surprised if Dubois goes to CBJ. Am I remembering that correctly?
I think I was the only guy, and not to toot my own horn, but
that's what I thought.
Yeah, I had him going there. Big year for Pierre-Luc coming up here.
Huge year, and he's healthy, and his brain's in the right spot. Looks to be a monster year for him and the Winnipeg Jets. But that season, Charlie McAvoy goes 14th overall to the Boston Bruins. The decision there is between McAvoy and Dante Fabbro for the Boston Bruins. A lot of Western scouts liked Dante Fabbro for the obvious reasons, and a lot East like Charlie McAvoy. Today he signs a contract, 8 years, $76 million. When you go back and look at that draft, some players have been traded. Patrick Laine, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Olli Olevi. You know, that was a season where, you know, as much as it was all about Matthews and Laine, I remember you were talking about all the defensemen in that draft. There's Sergachev, who ended up going to Montreal, now with Tampa. Jake Bean, who was drafted by the Carolina Hurricanes, and then Charlie McAvoy at 14. I know general managers always hate the redraft. Like, oh yeah, hindsight is 2020. But what did you think of those, if you can remember? And specifically Olli Olevi going that high. Now, he played with the powerhouse London Knights, but what did you make of the order that all those defensemen came in? Olevi, Sergachev, Jake Bean, and Charlie McAvoy. And
yeah,
then Jacob
really
Chychrun, two picks later at 16. And there was talk about him going second once upon a time. But anyway.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if going into that draft year, if you remember about Jacob Chychrun, I mean, he was the guy who was thought to be the number one guy. And it just kind of never really panned out that way for him. And Arizona was obviously happy that they got him where they did at 15 or 16, and they're building their franchise around him now. But I loved Olevi in his draft year. But then again, when you look back, he was surrounded by such good talent. His touches often resulted in points because every time he got it to one of the great forwards, the Marner, the Dvoraks, whoever else, Kachuk.
Keep going. Yeah.
It was going in the back of the net. So maybe the point totals were a little inflated. Now, having said all that, I've followed him pretty closely. I've had many conversations with people in the organization about him. And, you know, he got homesick for a little while.
Got hurt.
Injuries plagued him quite a bit through his time with the Vancouver organization. So it was probably the best time to part ways. But at the time, I think the only guy that I might have had ahead of him was Sergachev. And I love Sergachev only because that year I got to see him so often. I got to know his personality away from the rink. You got to see the size. And probably the thing that impressed him about me the most, Jeff, he learned English in basically 3 months. So that tells me everything about how smart the guy is. And then you look at him now, he's a two-time Stanley Cup champ. He's an anchor in the top four for Tampa Bay. You know, Montreal, the Drouin trade, that might be a redo if you went back and did it. But he's probably the only guy I liked above Olevi. Chychrun I had a little bit down. Bean I had a bit further down. So McAvoy was in a spot probably pretty close to where I predicted him. But the redraft it's really interesting because you think about the guys there. Olevi, Alex Nylander went before him. Logan Brown went before him. Tyson Jost was there. Mikey
McLeod.
Like, you think about it, Jeff, and really it's, to see McAvoy, if you went back and did the redraft as a top 3 to 5 guy, wouldn't be out of the question.
Oh, 100% he's in that. I mean, listen, here's a guy who's in the Norris conversation every year. Yeah, like I'm just curious, like, what if you can recall what you thought of McAvoy going in, because I seem to remember having a conversation with you when you were saying, like, look, don't sleep on this guy. Like, Sergachev this and Sergachev that, and that's certainly true. And I think Rocky Thompson did a great job with him in Windsor. But McAvoy, who now signs the huge ticket, and by the way, pointing this out in hour one, Sam, you know, breaks the streak of Boston Bruins players coming in well under market value.
Yeah,
like this ends that we take less to stay here. We're the Boston Bruins. Like,
yeah,
Sammy, that's over now. But did you ever project him to be? I mean, we knew he was going to be good. Did you ever project McAvoy to be this good?
Not defensively. And is there still holes there? Yeah, sure. But oftentimes you get guys with really good feet, and they're, you know, they're really good point producers. And in his case, in college, you think, all right, well, you know, is he just going to be that guy and not be able to defend? But he showed a heaviness to his game that I didn't expect. He showed his ability to defend, which is probably more than I would have expected from him. And, of course, he's still bringing the offense to the table. But the one thing you liked about his game is that it was kind of unbridled. It was unharnessed. Like, he'd take the puck and he'd go. And it didn't matter who it was against or what situation it was. He was that confident in his abilities with the puck that – he would carry it and he would be able to produce or make things happen with it. So those are the things that I remember about Charlie at that time. But I've been so impressed with his ability. And I guess you don't really have a choice when you're playing with guys like Krejci, you know, before he left, and of course Bergeron, that yeah. You're going to have to hone that part of your game, even though there are different positions, obviously, but you're going to have to hone that part of the game to play in that Boston system, you know?
Good to see Montreal. Once again, I mean, they got pooched on the one draft because of COVID, but the NHL does go back to a really special place for the draft, July 7th and 8th. So very much looking forward to that draft coming up in Montreal. The only thing, and I can remember talking to you about this countless times, and it always, it just really leaves me really uncomfortable. Like, I really hate it because I really like the player to have his moment. You and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
The phenomenon of, and this year it'll be after the 32nd pick. As soon as the 32nd pick will be made, 31 other tables will pack up their stuff and start leaving as the kid walks to the podium.
Yeah.
In this league where we talk about, you know, respect and behavior and letting kids have their moments at the draft, to me it's a horrible way to end the draft. I can't stand it. You know, like, let the kid, like, just sit at the table. Let this kid have his walk from the stands with his family and his agent. Let him have that walk to the podium, shake the commissioner's hand, put on the baseball hat and the jersey, all of it. And then when that is done, then it'll take you an extra 5 minutes. But just the sight of everybody packing up as pick number, previously 31, now 32, yeah. Makes his way to the podium and fights through people that are packing up. Oh, scouts going, GM's going, AGM's going.
Yeah.
I don't know, Sammy. It just leaves a really bad taste in my mouth for how to end a draft. You agree or disagree?
Yeah. It is a little bit of a bad luck. But I got to say, there's been a couple of the drafts where I've been guilty of doing the same. That's just to be honest. No, but you're right, and especially with the 2 year absence of being in the arena, like, yeah. It's a good thing you don't show it on TV because it would really optically not look
no,
good.
No, you know what? Show it on TV.
Yeah,
You want to get it to stop? Show the tables that are standing up leaving.
Might be a few fines levied, Jeffy.
you're the best, Sammy Cause. We got to hustle. You can read Sammy's prospect notebook and early look at the 2022 draft at sportsnet.ca. Always great work, Sam. Look forward to catching up again real soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jeff. Take care.
Appreciate it. There he is, the great Sam Cosentino. Read his work at sportsnet.ca. Listen, no surprise, Shane Wright will go stem to stern as the number one prospect this year. Who gets him? I don't know. It's a race to the basement. Although Buffalo did whip the Habs 5-1 yesterday, they'll be there, as we suspect the Arizona Coyotes will as well. We turn our attention now to the Boston Bruins and a massive contract signed by Charlie McAvoy, our good friend Andrew Raycroft here for comments on this Boston Bruins move. First of all, Andrew, good afternoon. Thanks so much for doing this, and how are you today?
I'm great, Jeff. Thanks for having me on anytime. Hopefully everything's going real well up there for you.
Things are good. I don't have to work for a living, so that makes it easier. All I have to do is say things like, that's offside, that's a bad pass, and we'll be right back. So things are good being me, Andrew, right now. And listen, things are really good to be Charlie McAvoy. And this is someone who every year is in the Norris Trophy conversation, as you well know. You cover McAvoy on a regular basis. You know the player a lot better than I do. 8 years, $76 million, AAV of 9.5, to which Andrew Raycroft says what?
Great deal for player, organization, and city at this point. The torch is passed officially from Ray Bourque to Zdeno Chara to Charlie McAvoy here in Boston, and to get him under the $10 million number is real good for the Boston Bruins. That felt like the hometown discount that everyone was talking about here in Boston. So to lock him in for 8 years as well, not a bridge deal, not a let's deal with this again in 3 or 4 years. This will get him through most of his prime years as a NHL defenseman.
So everybody, like all you guys at Nesson, must have been like primed for this for the past couple of weeks, right? Like knowing that this thing, like I know at times it's sort of stalled and it's on again, it's off again. That's just the nature of a negotiation. But you guys have been ready for this for a while now, right?
Never got the sense that it was in danger or Charlie was going to go test the market. It felt like they were going to find a way to get it done. Charlie's a first round pick of this team. The Bruins have done an amazing job of keeping their guys in-house all the way back from the Patrice Bergeron days, which is now 16, 17 years for him. So they've found the secret sauce in the culture and doing what they need to do as an organization to keep guys here, and Charlie fell into that slot as well.
Is this, Andrew Raycroft, the end of the we take less to be a Bruin era of the Boston Bruins?
It's certainly the end of, and it's gotten blown out of the water, the Patrice Bergeron salary cap era of the Boston Bruins. That's long gone. It's now the Charlie McAvoy cap, and we'll see how David Pastrnak is, I suppose, the next young guy who's going to come up again soon here in the next couple of years. We'll challenge that 9.5, but certainly the days of staying under Patrice are long gone now.
You know, I can. I always wonder what this does to that dynamic of a room. And listen, you played in the NHL. You know this a lot better than I do. Players are competitive on the ice against other teams, and players are competitive against each other. And I'll give you one example that I still look back at it, and I still smile at it for what it was. When the Maple Leafs signed Jason Allison, it was $1.5 million, one-year contract. And the next signing was Eric Lindros, and it was 1.55. And I said to myself, like, you just have to be that much. Like, this is how it's going to work. This is where you're, what rung you're at on the ladder. And this is where I'm going to be. Like, it's that nature of competition. But I wonder, Andrew, what does this deal now? You know, he becomes the highest paid Bruin. What does that do in the room? If anything, like we all hear stories like this guy hates his contract and that therefore he's sour at this guy who has more. And I don't know. I don't know the room. You do. I don't know these players. You do. Give us your thoughts on the dynamic now of McAvoy coming in, you know, with the big $76 million in his jeans.
Yeah, I picture Big E on the phone saying there's no way in hell I'm playing less than Jason Allison. So make it happen if you want me here. I can picture that happening.
You can see it, right?
Oh, without question, without question, especially the Big E. And well, listen, this there's certainly going to be some ribbing. I don't think there's definitely competition. The guys that would have an issue with it aren't guys that are going to have money issues, meaning Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron. Those guys, certainly one of them is going to the Hockey Hall of Fame and will be making money many different ways for a really long time and has been happy to get the deals that he's had. So there's no question Brad Marchand is giving it to Charlie McAvoy today about how much money he's going to make, and they're going to humble him in any other way they can possibly can. And it might not be on the pay stub next season, but they'll keep him in check, and they'll keep any of these other younger guys that think they're making a lot of money and can take over the room. I don't believe that's going to happen for a few more years.
You know, Andrew, you mentioned Patrice Bergeron there a couple of moments ago. I want to pick up a conversation that a lot of people are having and have had for a while now. When you consider what Bergeron has accomplished in the game, when you consider that he's been as close to a perfect forward as we have in the game right now, when you consider what he's put his body through going back to the, you know, even going back to that, you know, the Philly series with the Randy Jones incident and what he's played through, and you know what's happened to his body all these seasons, yet he perseveres and still plays at an elite level. No one would be surprised if Patrice Bergeron played out this contract and said, "I'm out." Are you one of those people?
I wouldn't. I guess I would be surprised. I wouldn't be shocked. And I'm going to add another point to all of those games he's played, all of the serious injuries he had, especially early in his career. Now, you know, now he's able to. The game's a little bit different than what it was in 2005 and 6 and 7. But the one other thing I'll mention is that I don't think Patrice Bergeron is going to be the guy who goes on tour his last season in the NHL. And he's not a guy that will be the one that wants to have the ceremonial stick in the air 6, 7, 8 times a season in a different rink, especially across Canada.
I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Dennis Potvin tour at the end of his career, where every rink that he went into was a bouquet of flowers at center ice. And
cowboy boots pictures. In Calgary.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Bergeron wants to do that. I'm with you on that one.
And so to that point, I could see it ending on a one-year deal where he just goes away or just comes in and retires, a la David Krejci. You know, keep everybody on the hook and then – you know, June 1st, all right, this was my last year. I want to thank everybody. I don't think it's coming in 8 months. I could see it being another season or two. But to that point, I do see it being now a one and done. Let's see where my body's at. Let's see my family's getting older. Let's see where I'm at. So that's my opinion of Patrice. I haven't had a conversation with him personally about it, but that's my sense, is that it's not going to be in 8 months, but it will be more of a one-year recalibration from now on.
You think Krejci's really done with the Bruins?
There's still some smoke. There's still some smoke. I'm still – it's hard to come back after going over there and going to your hometown and enjoying family life and being around so much to going back to the NHL grind at that age. And we've seen a guy like Jaromír Jágr do it, but there's not many other guys that are able to come back and keep the passion, keep the intensity after going home, quote unquote, and playing in Europe. So there's no question he's got the skill level, and there's no question that the Bruins and people here are still talking about that possibility. I just lean that, you know, how hard that's going to actually be in an 82. We keep forgetting this is going to be an 82 game season this year, and how hard 82 NHL game seasons are. I feel like with the pandemic, I've lost a little bit of sense of that, and that 56 games in our division, just going to New York and back, is a lot easier than these time changes everyone's going to be dealing with again, and what the NHL schedule in March and April looks like on top of an Olympic year for the Olympic guys. It's going to be a slog, and to bring that intensity for David Krejci back for that, I feel like it's difficult.
You bring up a great point, and I don't know if I think you're right, Andrew. I don't think people have considered, like, let the gravity of this sink in. Like, this is going to be 82 games. Like, we're just not conditioned to that right now after having gone through, you know, the bubble, which was just a playoff, obviously, and then a shortened season last year. Like, it's going to get to, do you get the feeling that it's going to get to January and we're going to all be like, wait a minute, there's more hockey? Like, last year felt like the shortest, longest season ever. What's this season going to feel like for everybody?
Exactly. And there's going to be so much overreaction in the next month and a half over it, because it was such a sprint last year and every game was divisional, and it didn't end up getting as close as I thought it was going to at the end of the season. There were certainly have and have nots in every division, a couple races close at the end. But this season, I think there's going to be an overreaction early. And to your point, we're going to wake up on January 5th and realize there's still 60 games left and kind of look at each other like, wow, this is going to be an absolute grind. And players are going to wake up on their 3-4s after playing in L.A. the night before and playing a 4 o'clock Phoenix game with nobody in the stands and looking at each other like, wow, I forgot how hard this was.
It's not easy being an NHLer. You know that, man. You played a real demanding position. Let me ask you a goalie question as well. I don't think that in any sport, there's been a position that has evolved quicker than goaltender. Like, I go back, like, even like games like 30 years ago, and it is night and day. We've all gone back and watched vintage games and watched goalies come out, you know, go out to the top of the dots to cut down an angle on a shot. You know, nobody doing butterfly, no one ceiling. Like, I don't think that there's been a position in all of sports that's improved as much as the position of goaltender in the NHL. When you look back to when you played and you look at goaltenders now, what jumps out at you? Because, like, that's not too much of a separation, but how much has it evolved since you hung them up?
Well, there's two things for me. And number one is coaching. And the age, everyone has a goalie coach at the age of 9 now. So these kids are so technically sound. They're athletes, but they've got that just, it's just ingrained. It's absolute basics, what I was trying to learn when I was getting to the NHL or when I was getting into juniors and learning these things. These kids have it now. Yeah. But even more importantly than all that coaching is the equipment. Kids can't get hurt with the puck anymore. And no matter how hard the players are shooting now, that has the training, their ability to train consistently and get hit with pucks over and over and over again and not get hurt, whether it's your arms bruising. Because even when I was playing, my equipment was obviously much better than guys that were in the mid-80s with Felix Potvin and Patrick Waugh were wearing in the 80s and 90s, but it wasn't as good as what it is now. And guys, it's so light. They've been using it forever. No, they've never had to be afraid of a puck or never thought they were going to get hurt with a puck, and I think they can stick in and train and coach much more because of that.
Makes a lot of sense. You're bang on. Wish we had more time to get into the goalie conversation. Let's do it another time. Andrew Raycroft from Nesson, thanks so much for stopping by today and sharing your expertise on Charlie McAvoy and the rest of the Boston Bruins. I really appreciate it, bud.
Anytime, Jeff. Love it. Have a great weekend.
There he is, Andrew Raycroft, former NHL netminder, now analyst for the Boston Bruins on Nesson. We got to hustle. Man, that was fun talking to Sammy and Andrew. We're going to come back, talk to Brad for a living. General manager of the Calgary Flames joins us next on The Merrick Show. Keep it here. Welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for joining me today, by the way. Busy day, really busy first week. In the NHL, and some teams haven't even played their first game yet. So one of those teams, the Calgary Flames, will see them in action. Saturday, they face off against the Edmonton Oilers on Hockey Night in Canada. We are standing by for Flames general manager Brad Treliving, who's poised to join us here in a couple of moments. Things to discuss with Treliving. One of the things that I'm most curious about is the future of Andrew Mangiapane, who, like, I love stories like this. Like, I think you probably do as well if you're anything like me, or you just like an underdog story. Here's a perennial underdog guy, you know, never drafted into the Ontario Hockey League, a late pick by the Calgary Flames after a really nice season with Dale Hawerchuk's Barry Colts. He thought he was going to college, and a couple of conversations with a scout, went to Barry Colts' camp, made the team. Next thing you know, he's leading the team in scoring, ripping up the Ontario Hockey League. The Calgary Flames take him later on in the draft. He never played internationally for Canada until last season at the World Hockey Championships, where Canada seemingly lost every game early. What did they lose, like 3 or 4 games in a row, and then ended up winning the entire thing? Andrew Mangiapane named MVP of the tournament. What's the future for him with the Calgary Flames? Curious to hear Brad Treliving's thoughts on where Andrew Mangiapane fits in. And, you know, the Calgary Flames, we've talked about this a couple of different times, with some interesting off-season moves. You know, Daryl Sutter has always talked about it's a 3-2 league. You know, the NHL score is 3-2. We're going to construct teams to win a lot of 3-2 games. And as you look at it, sure, there are guys that can break a game open. And one of the players you think about automatically is Johnny Gaudreau. But in a lot of ways, this is a team that you know you're going to get an honest effort from. It's going to be a hardworking team. And to Sutter's point, could just end up winning a lot of 3-2 games. We're being joined now by Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. First of all, Brad, thanks so much for joining me today. How are you today?
Doing good, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is mine. Just opining a little bit about Andrew Mangiapane there off the top. And I think I've spoken to him twice in my life, once when he played with the Barry Colts and then once most recently at the NHL Players Tour. Been a fan for a long time. The consummate underdog story. Great performance at the World Hockey Championships. I know you've been pleased with some of the results that you've seen from him. You know, last season, 32 points in 56 games. And curious about the future there. Like, what does Brad Treliving think of Andrew Mangiapane right now? And at 25 years of age, where do you think Mangiapane can still get to?
Well, we think real highly of him. And, you know, he's been a guy that's he's taken a step every year. And really, Jeff, it's a testament to the work he puts in. And it doesn't come by accident. He's certainly been a guy who's been doubted his whole career.
Yes.
But he's one of the guys, if you come and watch our practice, you know, he's the last guy off every day. He's working on something to make his game better. He goes away in the summer and focuses in on an area or two to make himself better. So he's constantly finding ways to, you know, make himself a better player and have a bigger impact. And we certainly need him to have one for us this year. I think there's certainly another level he can get to, and there's areas that he can add to his game. But a really good player, you know, and one of those guys that touches, you know, we've got him into a penalty killing role and had him do a little bit of that last year. So really touches all parts of the game, whether it be 5-on-5, mm-hmm. power play, penalty kill, you know, 3-on-3. So an important guy for us and still a young player that continues to grow.
You know, Brad, as you all know, the old hockey saying is, you know, a small player has to prove that he can play and a big player has to prove that he can't. And I know that that is changing each and every season. But that does lead me to wonder, what did you first think when you first saw Andrew Mangiapane play?
Well, I remember seeing him playing in Barry. You know, we had drafted Rasmus Anderson out of there. They had a number of prospects. I remember going and watching him play, you know, even scouting players on another team. And there's just this kid that was sort of making plays all the time. And I remember one of the first games I went and watched him play, and I wasn't there to watch him. Again, it was watching another player. And, you know, he just catches your eye. He makes plays. He's relentless. And then he scored I vividly remember he scored a really nice goal in the shootout. So here's this kid mm-hmm. with ability. The only thing he didn't have was height, you know. But, you know, the game has come to those type of players over the course of the last number of years. And I just think, you know, whatever era, whatever style of play Andrew fits in, he's a really competitive, highly competitive kid. And he's strong. What he doesn't have in height, he's... You know, he's a thick, strong kid, and but he even going and watching him as an amateur, it's hard not to notice him on the ice because he was, like I said, he was all over the puck. He made plays, you know, a second and third effort guy, and certainly, you know, became much more interested after we drafted him and going to see him play. You know, in Barry and following him through the American Hockey League has been a wonderful story.
One quick question about Mark Giordano, and then I want to move on to the Calgary Flames right now. We've seen teams lose their number one defenseman who also happens to be their captain. And we think of the St. Louis Blues with Alex Pietrangelo. And it seems from my perch that, you know, the minute that Pietrangelo became a Vegas Golden Knight, and maybe even previous when they got some Pietrangelo insurance with Justin Falk, it seemed as if St. Louis went about trying to bring in players that could do some of the things that Pietrangelo could do. You know, here comes Torrey Krug to replace some offense. Colton Parayko is going to do some things. And it just seemed as if they were looking for defensemen that could do some of the things that Pietrangelo did. I understand there's tough decisions, and that was a huge one for you, Brad. What do you do when you lose someone like Mark Giordano and you look at your blue line? Are you looking for players that come in that can do some of the things that Giordano did? Like, what? Like, walk us through how a GM thinks when that happens to him.
Well, in Gio's case, it was an expansion year, and we tried everything to not lose Mark. It was, you know, under our circumstances, when we could protect three defensemen. So,
yes.
You know, they just we couldn't find a way to keep Mark, and it's a huge loss for us. But we have to move on. You're not going to replace him. You know, a player that of Mark's stature that does everything, you're not going to bring in one guy to replace him. We've got, you know, some young players that we think are evolving, continue to evolve, that hopefully can grab some power play time. We've got some players here that can hopefully grab some penalty kill time. And then we're going to need everybody to grab a little bite of it on the 5-on-5 piece. So, you know, to say that Mark's leaving and we're going to bring in this player, that's just it's not reality. It's opened up some opportunity for some younger players on our left side that aren't necessarily, you know, they're not 18, 19-year-old players coming out of junior. They've been in pro for a while. And now, you know, this is their opportunity to grab a hold of it. And like I said, by committee is the way we're going to try to absorb that loss. But it's when you lose top players, it's difficult. But that's the job of, you know, ourselves, the coaches, the players themselves, to grab a hold of it and you know, spread that responsibility around.
To your Calgary Flames this season. To me, Jacob Markstrom remains one of the most interesting players on the squad. I am curious, now that the era of the heavy workload is gone, do you have a magic number in your head for starts for Markstrom, or do you just sort of go week to week, month to month, see where the battery's at between the two?
Well, I think you always have a number, but, you know, we're not focused on that. You know, at the end of the day, you can have a number, but when you need, you know, when it may not match up to what you need in terms of wins and points. So certainly, especially out west, you're cognizant of travel and the workload, and we're in a condensed schedule and all those types of things. But, you know, Jacob's a guy who likes to play a lot, likes to, you know, likes volume of games. That's not really our focus right now, Jeff. Obviously, we've got to focus on our start here tomorrow night, and, you know, we'll monitor it as we go. We brought in a young goal turner in Dan Vladar, who our staff really thought highly of out of Boston, and made a deal for him. And, you know, he's been a guy who's had real good success in the American Hockey League, and now is, you know, knocking on the door to get his opportunity in this league. So we're going to have to balance the workload, but, you know, the focus here is just sort of take it a game at a time and see where Jacob's at, and hopefully Dan can, you know, Dan can continue to grow his game, and that can give us a good pair in that.
Is this the latest any of your teams has started a season? We're waiting for the Calgary Flames to join the NHL.
Yeah, here. I think so. You know, we're part of the league. We're over here. We'll jump in as soon as they let us. But, you know, one thing it has, I mean, the schedule's a schedule. You know, it's given us a little, you know, it gives us an extra week. The one thing is, quite frankly, after a couple of practices, you know, the guys are sort of like, uncle, let's get going here. Now, we've had some injuries through camp. You know, we've battled some stuff. So, you know, that extra few days hopefully gives, you know, hopefully on the other side of it, it will benefit in terms of getting guys closer to some health. But, you know, the schedule's a schedule. We've known it since it came out, and you prepare the week. And I think the staff's done a good job, and, you know, and we're ready, you know, we'll be ready to go tomorrow night.
Sean Monahan, first of all, how's he feeling? How's the health? And what's the expectation for Monahan this season?
Well, he's, credit to Sean, the work he put in this summer. He had surgery, you know, we shut him down early last year. He had surgery on a hip that was bugging him all year. And he, you know, he's done really well, touch wood, that, you know, things have gone better than we would have hoped. You know, the training staff really wanted to, you know, make camp as the best they possibly could for him. So we gave him some extra time at the beginning, and, you know, we got into a couple of preseason games. This is the best he's felt a long time. I think in a lot of cases, when you go through an injury, you know something's wrong, but you don't know how much maybe it was bugging you until you get it fixed and you feel that much better. So, so health-wise, you know, we're hopeful that he's looking good, he's feeling good, and expectation is, you know, nothing more than just the best Sean Monahan is what we need. And if we can get the very best that Sean Monahan's capable of, that's going to be good enough for us. We know what he's capable of. He's an elite shooter in this league. I think over the course of the last number of years, he's continued to dig in sort of in his 200-foot game and you know, be able to play on both sides of the puck, and we're going to need that. But Sean is he's shown to be a deadly scorer around the net ever since he's entered the league. With his health where it is now, we're hopeful that we can get him back to where we know what he's capable of doing.
With Flames general manager Brad Treliving, a few weeks ago, as part of the NHL Players Tour, Elliot and I sat down with Matthew Tkachuk, and one of the things that he was quite vocal about was his brother's negotiations with the Ottawa Senators. And talking about, you know, when you negotiate with one of the Tkachuks, you negotiate with all of us, etc. It's not just Newport, it's also Team Tkachuk. When Matthew Tkachuk says things like that, I'm curious, Brad, you know, what do you think? Do you think like, ugh, I don't need this? Or do you think, well, that's just Matthew Tkachuk?
Well, I think that's Matthew, right? I think he's a great personality. He's got a great, you know, large personality. You know, it's sort of like his game. When Matthew's on, he's sort of bigger than life. And, you know, he's a real smart kid. He follows the game. You know, one of the things people probably don't know, like Matthew knows, he watches hockey every night. You know, he knows what's going on around the league. So those things don't bother me at all. He's, you know, obviously he's, you know, it's good to see Brady get done. You know, it's a hockey family. They're very involved with each other's careers. They support each other. So, you know, Matthew's, you know, I know he was following it closely. And then when he got here, it was all business. And he was focused on, you know, his team here, getting himself ready. And he's had a really good summer. Matthew looks great in terms of from the conditioning and the shape he came in camp. But his game has looked real good through the preseason. He's been real, you know, he's had a real serious demeanor about himself. I just think he's a top player. You know, the way he thinks the game. He's a throwback, Jeff. He's one of those guys that, you know, he drags his teammates into battle every night. But just like everybody else, you know, our season was disappointing last year. We need our top players, and Matthew's certainly one of them, to get back to the level and to the level that we know they're capable of. And I have every confidence Matthew will this year.
He's one of our favorites. You know, whether you're a Calgary Flames fan or not, like it's a better league when someone like Matthew Tkachuk is in it. I want to end on this one. Just talking to Andrew Raycroft a couple of seconds ago, and we were talking about, you know, do you remember what an 82 game schedule is like and what it brings with you? Because it's been a couple of seasons since we've had and fingers crossed we get there, 82 game season. How much as a manager do you prepare, not just your players, but your entire staff, and remind them that, hang on, you might not remember this, but 82 games is really long?
Yeah, it's a grind. It feels like it's been really long, you know, the last 18 months, although we haven't played 82 games. I think there's almost a newness to the start of this year. Not only the schedule that we're you know, somewhat back to normal here. You've got fans in the building, which we didn't have in Canada last year. You know, and that it feels like forever since that's happened. And even the divisions. You know, I found myself last year a lot of times feeling like, you know, we were in different leagues. You know, you played within your division. You were so focused on those teams up here with the Canadian division. That getting back and playing the teams in the Pacific, you sort of got to reacquaint yourself to it. So certainly, you know, we certainly are mindful that this is, it is a long grind of a season, and you've got to be steady at the wheel. But I think there's a lot of, know, there's a lot of things that makes this, anytime you start a season, it's exciting, but, you know, going through what everybody's gone through the last 18 months, be able to get the back to an 82-game season, get back to, you know, sort of a regular schedule, being on the road, fans in the building, all those things, I think, you know, contribute to make this even more special to start the year. So we're excited about it and looking forward to the challenge ahead.
Absolutely. Listen, we'll let you go on that. Thanks so much for stopping by, Brad. Always a delight catching up. Best of luck against the Oilers Saturday, and best of luck this season with your Flames. Thanks so much for doing
it. Very much, Jeff. Yep, be safe. Be well. Thank you.
Be good. There he is, Brad Treliving, general manager of the Calgary Flames, stopping by the program today. A big thanks to Brad and the Calgary Flames for making him available. Want to thank all of our guests as we close out today. Andrew Raycroft talking about the Charlie McAvoy contract. If you missed the news, 8 years, $76 million. That is an AAV of $9.5 million. The era of the discount for the Bruins player is over. That's how much McAvoy thought he was worth, and that's how much McAvoy got. And I'll tell you what, for someone who's always in the conversation for the Norris, tough to make an argument against that contract. He is that good of a player. By the time he's wrapped up, like we all know, Charlie McAvoy is going to have at least one and maybe a couple of Norris trophies in his hip pockets. So thanks to Andrew for stopping by as well. Thanks to Sam Cosentino. You can read his prospect notebook. It is out on the 2022 draft class. Read it at sportsnet.ca. Thomas Drantz, don't forget, if you're listening on Sportsnet 650, starting up his own show Monday right after this one. Co-host along with Jamie Dodd of the Canucks Hour. And as we do each and every program, Elliot Friedman kicked it off. We talked about McAvoy, and we talked about the first couple of days around the NHL. Thanks to my producer, Matt Marchese. Technical operation provided by the one and only marathoner, Lance Kennedy. Thank you, Lance. And thanks for listening once again to The Merrick Show. Hope you have a wonderful and safe weekend. We're back on Monday at noon Eastern for more of The Merrick Show. Be well. Take care.